Hi there, you're listening to a SideQuest, a video games podcast for people too busy to play video games. I'm Dave Rupert.
I'm Yon Huang.
I'm Zach Meyer.
And this is a special edition. This is our book club episode of a SideQuest. This week, or I guess what, this month or so, Zach, is that right?
February.
We got around, we all read Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, which is a book that's kind of, Jan, how would you describe it? It's a book about the video game industry.
Yeah.
But maybe you can give us a little more kind of shape.
Well, it's the headline of the book is The Triumphant Turbulent Stories Behind How Video Games Are Made. And it's written by Jason, Char. So yeah, it's a book just talk about all the games that was in development between 2012 and pretty much 2016, and it's just collect all these stories of how the games from indie to triple A and from major publishers, how they come about and how we have a finished product of a video game that we all enjoy today. So it's just a whole bunch of interesting stories.
And we should say, like, I don't think, like, there's too many spoilers. Like, again, like all the games were like 2016. So, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any like game spoilers per se, but if you like want to read this book, then maybe there will be like spoilers in this and you should like skip ahead to like 10 minutes or so where we're like go back to our normal stand-up or whatever. But I just wanted to read like the chapter titles for the games and then like kind of go around and give our impressions. But the first chapter one was Pillars of Eternity, which was that was like a Kickstarter game, right? Uncharted 4, Stardew Valley, Diablo 3, Halo Wars, Dragon Age Inquisition, Shovel Knight, Destiny, The Witcher 3, and then Star Wars 1313. So they were kind of, I will start this and I will say I was kind of surprised these were like name brand like franchises, yeah. Right? I thought that was maybe the most shocking part.
Yeah, it was interesting the breadth of really name brand or like titles of games that are like super big in pop culture, even though they're like you introduced, like they're all from different ranges of studios, from individuals to people with deep pockets like Microsoft. And I thought the most interesting thing, or one of the most interesting things about the book, was the fact that they all share a lot of very similar difficulties in terms of managing scope and budget and time and features. It's this very interesting pattern that is fairly relevant to us as people who daytime sling code for a living.
Yeah, that's what I liked about it, and everything I like highlighted was like all about like how to not blow scope or like what made it successful. Because I don't know that all of these were like successful. I don't think anyone has heard of Star Wars 1313. But like just the iterations or whatever. Like I don't know. I found this to be a pretty cool like way to kind of get a behind the scenes look. Jan, what was kind of your like first impressions?
After finishing the book, it just made me appreciate game development and the energy and all the effort, all the people, they're so passionate about, right? And so at the end of it, I was kind of like, man, I don't want to complain about a game ever again, because it just sounds like so much work gets put into it. And just hearing about how developers would like, pull all nighters just to fix a bug or something. And they keep saying like like people are not forcing them to stay, but they feel like they have to because these hard deadlines. Mm-hmm. So just listening through all that, I just felt like so much sympathy for them.
Yeah, I think it was the folks who did Uncharted, forgetting the name of the studio.
Naughty Dog.
Yeah, Naughty Dog. They're just kind of like, crunch culture. Like, what can you do? Like, that's how they get done, you know? Mm-hmm. And they just kind of were resigned to the crunch kind of culture. But, like, in the same, like, breath of they're just like, what can you do? It's like the next sentence is like, and they split off and like quit the company because they were so burnt out or whatever, yeah. You know, like, and so I know there's like a lot of like, you know, I think Blizzard or, somebody recently got kind of, I guess outed for their kind of crunch culture behavior. Maybe it wasn't Blizzard, but, I don't know. What do y'all have feelings about that or what, you know?
That was like was like one of the first terms, you know, the first chapter actually from Pillars of Eternity. The author introduced that word crunch early, and it was like the only mm-hmm. word that you heard often throughout the book. And it just seems like it was just so much like politics going on, like even to get something started. Like I think the one that stood out to me the most was during Halo Wars. Like Ensemble mm-hmm. Studios, they made Age of Empire, so they made like a
which is like a huge franchise. Mm-hmm. Like that's like a very popular PC. Yeah,
it's a huge RTS game, right?
Yeah,
and then they're like, yeah, but like let's do Halo. Mm-hmm.
And then there was drama on top of that where. Mm-hmm. Where the, you know, Bungie at the time that was working on Halo was like, hey, this is our baby. And they're just like holding back so many of their IP, whether it's Master Chief or even the Warthog. They were just, but eventually it did get into the game, but it was just like two big studios, you know, that powered these huge games for us in the early 2000s, just trying to like share ideas underneath one umbrella company. And that right there was like, it was really interesting to read about how they exchanged and shared these, you know, these IPs. And it's almost like, it's like trading. One of the first things that came to my head was like trading cards when you're little, you know, where you trade like baseball cards with somebody. It's like, well, you know, it's almost trying to share that kind of idea and just like being really greedy about your assets.
Zach, did you have a standout chapter?
I think the most encouraging or triumphant to me story was probably the Stardew Valley chapter. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of incredible that one guy as he
5 years or something.
As he kind of voices to Jason the idea that it just went on too long and he should have been more focused and all this stuff, but he really transformed himself and the thing that he was working on perpetually. And it's kind of like it's kind of like a beautiful victory at the end. You know, he's got this thing that, you know, the creator of Harvest Moon played and complimented him on. Like, you know, like imagine building something in honor of something that you were inspired by, and having the person who created that thing that you were inspired by being like, oh, wow, you did this really incredible thing. And I like it also, like that sort of like, you know,
if I ever made a platformer and then Shigeru Miyamoto was like, it's fun, I would be a puddle for the rest of my life. I would just be an emotional puddle for the rest of my life.
I thought that was just like a really beautiful chapter. It was nice to read that because, I mean, that one and I think Jan would agree, like the Diablo 3 chapter was really kind of hit home because I for sure played the beta and I was like, oh, I don't like this. I was like a part of that crowd who was like, I'll wait for it to fix itself. And then, you know, sure enough, about a year later, you know, they come in and kind of get a do-over on the game and on the system and figured out like, oh, this is what players want. And they, you know, adjusted the game to be that. And they learned a lot of good lessons. And I think that, you know, the lessons learned by that team and, you know, what they derived from understanding what the goal is for the project was like a key theme in each of the chapters. And so I think the biggest point, or maybe it's one that we can reapply to our projects, is like, you know, if you don't have that singular vision and voice from your, you know, from the leadership or whoever's, you know, the producer or the director of a game, it spirals. Like if there isn't a true, you know, if there aren't like real milestones to be aiming for, like this is the thing we want to make. So I think that was like a Indeed. Really sharp moment.
And they gambled, quite literally. They said, oh, our moneymaker is kind of a bummer. Like the way we do like eBay for loot,
yep,
or whatever they did.
The auction house.
And
the real the money auction house.
Real money, yo.
And so they basically had to be like, this auction house isn't good.
Yeah.
And we don't give you good loot in the game, and we need to give you good loot in the game. And what a major, you know, and Blizzard is such a good studio, mm-hmm, or whatever, but Activision Blizzard, but that's a big gamble, mm-hmm, like in some cojones to kind of be like, hey, so our moneymaker is bad and kind of the game is bad.
Yeah.
Like that's wow. And then the fact that they like course corrected, yeah, and created a Blockbusters is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
I think that's,
yeah, I was like a hardcore fan of Diablo 2, and it was what, a 12 year gap between Diablo 2 and Diablo 3. And then I still remember being up late at night at 2 a.m you know, waiting to download this game, and then got the
error 37.
Yeah, got the dreaded error number, and it was like, it was funny. Like even after reading that, I went back into my old Twitter, just went to my Twitter history, just pinpoint the launch date, and found like all my tweets that night at 2 a.m. I'm complaining about Diablo 3 and why I can't, mm-hmm, play it. So it was, it brought back some pretty funny memories, but. But you know, it took them a while. Like you said, it took them like 12 months or so to like just redo the game. And then after they fixed all the bugs, removed the real money auction house, and created adventure mode, you know, like, mm-hmm, an end game. It was a fun game. It was actually like one of my, like before Overwatch, I played the heck out of Diablo 3. That was my game. I would like finish work, finish dinner, and play Diablo 3 for hours. So they they really turned it around, and you know, like that, with that said, like going into the later chapter into Destiny, you know, how Destiny was kind of like it faces similar issue, you know, on release, mm-hmm, it just wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And Destiny is underneath the same banner from Activision Blizzard, and they're like, oh, you know, you guys came out from the other side, and it actually worked out. So I think, you know, if for all the crap that Diablo 3 went through and like had to, you know, re-envision itself, Destiny probably wouldn't even be where it's at today, because they, you know, like Activision Blizzard like pretty much helped them out, held their hand, get them out of the mud that they're in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I think every chapter I was like kind of engrossed in, because it's almost like blog posts, right? Like I don't know, 10 postmortems or something. It was pretty easy, yeah, to kind of get through. But Destiny was interesting because it was this big Bungie coup, like mutiny, basically. We're leaving Microsoft. F you guys. We're out. And then they get out and they're like, we don't got a plan.
Yeah.
This guy wants to make a dragon game. or something, World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they didn't have a plan. And then, but what I found was interesting is they sat around and they were like, hey, okay, what do our artists know how to make? Oh, well, they all know how to make Halo assets, like sci-fi stuff. And then they're like, what do our game designers know how to make? Oh, Halo assets or whatever. And so they basically were like forced through the talent they had in the organization to recreate Halo because they had some of the best sci-fi artists in the business. And that's not wrong, but it's just very like, man, I found it surprising they didn't really have a plan when they got out there. And then they kind of had promised this huge game, like never ending quests or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't like work really. The concept didn't work. I thought that was interesting. The Dragon Age Inquisition chapter I found really interesting just from a project management like a developer standpoint. I was getting very mad.
Yeah.
Cause that studio also did Mass Effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
BioWare Edmonton.
BioWare, right?
Yeah.
Edmonton.
It's,
they were also doing BioWare or Mass Effect, and Mass Effect was in Unreal. And then they're like, you know, we got to do a new engine for Inquisition, guys. What should we do? And they're like, Frostbite, which is this like doesn't even really work engine. And so they spend all this time to like basically patch this engine while they're like building out this new game, this epic, you know, fantasy. And I think it worked just because the game is still talked about today, but I was very mad from like if the whole shop is already like your blockbuster is already Unreal, just use that, you know.
Yeah.
That was pretty I just like had this like developer, I don't know, project manager panic attack, like why are you going this way, this is ridiculous. So and then yeah, they were all good. Witcher 3 I liked because I didn't play Witcher 3.
Oh man.
But you were just so proud of those boys and girls for finishing what they wanted to do. You were just, and then I didn't know that the lore was already like an existing lore that they had bought rights to. So that made the game even cooler.
Yeah, that was I think that was like the best idea that they had, was like instead of like, you know, build an entire new world out of like Destiny or even, I don't know, maybe Pillars of Eternity is a knockoff of another game, but it's just like something already existed and you already had a writer that had all these characters. So I thought that was a great idea for that company. What was they called? CD3 or CD?
Yeah, CD Projekt.
Project Red or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Poland. Mm-hmm. So
there, if you want a follow up expansion on that, you should check out the NoClip video series on Witcher 3. It gives a real big deep dive into CD Projekt's or Projekt's like birth and evolution, and they're some really sharp guys. And it's also kind of interesting how, like, so they talk about how BioWare influenced them because they were big fans of the Neverwinter games, which were like a top-down, you know, three-quarter view fantasy action RPGs. And that was the engine they used to build the first Witcher game. And now, if you look at a lot of the, and I'm going to bring this back around later, a lot of the open world action adventure games are very clearly modeling Witcher 3. And you can see it in the design of how like the crafting systems work to, you know, points of interest and all sorts of other things. And we can talk about that later, but it's interesting how, again, they drew from this like really deep well. And the same with the Obsidian guys. They talked about how they actually worked on the I think they worked on the second Baldur's Gate or the second Neverwinter game, which was originally a sequel to a game built by BioWare, Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter. So it's interesting how all these studios are kind of connected by these different origin points and how they kind of built on that like knowledge and produce something new out of it. So I just thought that was also really interesting. It's like they're refining each other's ideas into new ideas.
No, that's cool. it could just kind of keep getting better. Well, in what was it in I think it's The Witcher, and they were like, no FedEx quests.
Yes, that's that was my favorite rule. Part. Mm-hmm.
And they were like, because I mean, I feel like when they said that, I was like, it immediately like ruined every GTA game I've ever played.
Yeah,
I immediately like had like hundreds of hours of regret kind of fill up in my soul. But it was like, yeah, we're not just gonna like go make you take something to somebody. That's silly. We're not doing that anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was their limitation. But they still had this audacious goal of 100 hours of content, but they were like, we're not doing that. That's the one thing we can't do. And just, man, that's cool. That's big.
Yeah. It was just making like every side quest like meaningful, like give us some sort of extra lore to like a story, you know? And I think that would like makes me want to keep playing, you know, if my side quest has some meaning to it rather than I'm just delivering, you know, a basket of apples to somebody in the village because they want to make, you know, pie for everybody. You know, that's dumb to me. But I never played The Witcher 3. So now, I mean, after listening to the, after reading the book, I was like, I kind of want to play this, but I don't know if I have 100 hours for a game like that.
So, I mean, the good news about is that you can break it up. Like, you can, the main storyline will take you about 25 to 35, somewhere in there, but if you want to like unpack the whole world, you've got easy 100 hours of stuff to do. So there's enough variety in there that you can enjoy it to any measure you want. I think I put about, I want to say I put it like north of 60, not quite 100, but
Witcher 3 on? What platforms?
It's on everything except for Switch, basically. You can get it Expo and PS4, either Steam, or you can get it from CD Projekt Store. Yeah. Good old games.
It's like GOG. I see it on, you know, they're in the Steam, let's say, holiday sales. I've seen that you can get the Game of the Year edition pretty much all the DLCs for like $20.
Oh man, they have expansions. I don't want the expansions.
Oh no,
you want 200 hours. You thought 100 hours was a lot of gaming. Yeah.
You want that? Those two expansions are incredible. Like,
it's got a boat, dude.
Yeah, I could talk for 30 minutes about The Witcher 3, but I'm not going to because we've got important things to cover.
Would you recommend this book? Yes or no? Yes or no?
Yes, absolutely. Read Blood, Sweat, and Pixels if you love video games and you want to know more about the people who pour themselves into them, into making that entertainment for you. Totally worth it.
All right, let's cut over to our stand-up portion of the show.
Okay.
Brought to you by Casper Mattresses. Jan is making a deal with Casper.
It's good. Trying.
But we just want to sweeten the pot here by giving him a sample read. Jan, what games did you play?
Well, I mean, we could do the Apex Legends second. Okay. Been playing that. I'm starting to really like this game. So I've been playing a lot of Apex Legends. And I'm starting to get a better understanding of strategy and try to do, you know, like point of attack and plan of attack. Like just go in, try to collect the best guns and or even go in hot and try to take out, you know, a squad early. But yeah, I'm still enjoying, like, Apex Legends. It's probably like one of my favorite free games of the year so far.
I'll jump in with you.
Okay.
I think I've been playing Apex 2, and I think I finally figured out what guns I like, which has really amped up my level of the game, you know, because I know what I'm good with now and what I'm bad with, and like that's making it better. And then I'm getting a little better at fighting, but I don't know. Still, though, you like... I think you got killed by a pro streamer.
Oh, yes, right? I did. I got killed by pro streamer Dizzy with his 2 million damage and 40,000 body counts. I mean, it was...
With that one hero. Yes.
It was incredible. I was kind of like, yeah, at first I was like, I was thinking like, oh, these people are pretty good. They're grouped up well. And next thing you know, like somebody that I was playing with called, so like, that's Dizzy. And I'm like, oh no. And we got wiped as soon as we discovered who they were. So,
Yeah.
It's a good game.
But other than going up against pros, like NRG pros, it's good.
Yeah. So there's that.
Okay, go
so
ahead.
So went with Apex Legends. And then also been playing another Battle Royale game, like Tetris 99. Mm-hmm. Yes, Tetris.
I've heard it's good.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah, it's like you playing Tetris. Everybody has played Tetris once upon a time. Whether it's on, you know, a Game Boy or a browser or, I don't know, something, an iPad. I don't know if it's on an iPad or not. But yeah, it's Tetris, and it's great. It's no, like, weird shapes, just pretty traditional L shapes and T shapes and the long four. But it's fun. What I like about it is, like, it's you and 98 other players, and in the, like, you know, like, if you ever play competitive, like, puzzle games like this, like Puyo Puyo or even Dr. Mario, it's the same mechanics. It's like, if you're playing against somebody, you can send them junk or garbage or whatever. And the thing about, like, the game doesn't tell you how to play this Battle Royale game, but I think I figured out eventually, like, you can choose a random person in the 98 that you're playing against to send, you know, send your junk to, or you can send to somebody with badges. Those are your players that are like higher level. So you like early on, you just want to take them out. You want to take them out first, or else they get to take you out. And you can actually see from the screen who's struggling with a lot of trash or whatever. But it's fun. The best I finished was like 30 something, like 32. And I was like, well, I felt pretty accomplished. But like, it's a free game on the Nintendo Switch, and I'm if I need to like get away from any like Apex or Overwatch or whatever, I would totally jump into this game. It takes like a few, you know, takes minutes to play, and then you're in and you're out.
Does it have a 1P mode? Like can you play by yourself?
No,
only.
Mm-mm. Okay. It's good. It's you and 90 other players. One more mechanic in there that I like is that you can hold a piece. So you know how you can you like to have the four block, and I don't even know what's the name of that thing. I know that thing has an official name.
The line.
The line.
Yeah. It's a line.
So you can actually hold one piece while things are still falling, and that helps you strategize. So that's definitely something to consider when you're playing. Again, free to download, free to play. Like, that's it. I don't know if I'm going to buy any more games. Everything's free now. So, I don't know.
Yeah, everything's free now.
And finally, I'm playing... I had a recent business trip, and I took my 3DS instead of my Switch, and I played Metroid Return of Samus, so on the 3DS. So, made some... I'm probably, like, almost done. I think I'm about 80% done. 80% done. So I feel like I can see the light on that one.
Nice.
Nice. That's cool.
Zach, you want to go?
Oh yeah, sure.
What games did you play? What's your blocking?
It's pretty. It's pretty short. Well, I've been playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey on PlayStation 4. I'm like a very. Pretty certain this is like one of the better, as mentioned in at the book review, kind of like one of the better. We liked what we saw in Witcher 3, and we figured out a way to apply it to our franchise, and they did, and it works out pretty good. So they put action RPG elements into Assassin's Creed, and it feels nice. I think they started it with the last title, Origins, which was set in Egypt. This one is set in Greece. And is a lot of fun, looks beautiful, feels more like an adventure game than it does like an Assassin's game. Yeah, just enjoying that. I am debating about whether or not to adjust the difficulty because I've noticed that I've been playing it on hard mode and it does this thing where whenever you're in combat, it will spawn bounty hunters behind you in the middle of a fight. And I find this to be like a really kind of cheese move by the AI. Like, oh, you're doing too well, so I'm going to just like randomly add difficulty.
Yeah, it's not like a skill or hit points. It's like surprise, you're outnumbered.
Yeah, surprise, you're like outnumbered. Every fight. Yeah, by a lot. And then this the bounty hunter mechanism, the bounty hunters that they throw at you tend to be like a little bit stronger than you, so adds this level of like intensity. So I think I'm gonna step that down. I want to get back to Apex Legends. Just been kind of crashing every night due to new work, so my blocker is real life. as for stuff that's got shelved, as part of the PlayStation monthly thing, you get, you know, free titles. And so we were talking about snowboards and open world games recently. And so I was like, oh, well, I got Steep for free. I wonder if that's any good. So I plug it in.
How was it?
It is not very good, and I understand why it didn't do very well. I think there's this like delicate balance in any like sort of like fake extreme sports game. You know, I think we talked about Tony Hawk games a little while back. Tony Hawk hit the nail on the head with like the user inputting and understanding and mastering like how to move Tony Hawk and make him look cool while you're doing it. And Steep has somehow figured out how to make that process more difficult and not very rewarding, so it got deleted. And then for my...
On that note, sorry, extreme sports games that like just figure out how to make it fun. Mm-hmm. Have y'all seen the indie sensation Skatebird?
Mm-mm. No.
No?
Is this like... Who's it by?
It's like a, I don't know, I've seen it on like a I don't know, Screenshot Saturday kind of things, but Glass Bottom Games, I guess. But it's like it's Tony Hawk, but you're a bird, and you like just skate around on
I'm so <stuff. laughs>
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of like, sounds... I'm like, when's it on Switch?
It sounds genuinely better. Genuinely better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think there's like a flutter mechanic too, so you can kind of like super.
Oh, interesting.
Anyway, that's all I got. So, anyway.
Oh, no.
Hijacked your talk. Go ahead.
So it's okay. And then my sort of my shame piece right now is I restarted Zelda's Breath of the Wild. I'd gotten pretty far in it, but I hadn't touched it for a while, and I just forgot where I was and just wasn't used to playing it. So I just nuked my save and started over.
Whoa, man. Bold choice.
This is a deep, dark pattern. This is an anti-pattern that I've developed over the years where I'll, like, it's kind of like restarting a book. I don't mind doing it, but I realize when I'm doing it that I'm having to, you know, move the pile of rocks back over from where I moved them from. But... it's been really good. And actually, like, restarting the game, I feel like I understand how to be taught better by the opening. Like, I remember feeling really overwhelmed the first time. Like, and I'm like, okay, there's these pillars and there's this Sheikah thing. And yeah, you're telling me what the buttons are, but I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, there's just like so many new concepts to absorb. And
did you know that game? Did you know there's that game? There's like a tutorial how to fight.
Yeah, it's in one of the shrines, isn't it?
I don't know if it's in the. I think it was in one of the open field, shrines. And I never ran into that group that teaches you how to, like, you know, shield bash and like do the fast attack thing. I didn't see that until like much later. It's like, why are you teaching me this now?
Anyways. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I think they did that. Well, you know. Historically, Zelda games, like at least in the previous like five gens, have all been like 80 minutes of here's how to play the game. Oh, hi Link. So did you know by holding the Z button and targeting your enemy, you can like then slash? Like it was like too much of that, and they maybe went on the other side of it. Like, yeah, we're just gonna drop you in. You're a naked boy, and then you get a sail like in the first 2 minutes. So good luck.
Yeah.
Welcome to Zelda. find weapons, survive. Yeah. Well, my issue was when, like, because you have to go to, like, a snow temple or whatever.
Yes.
And they don't really, like, tell you how to survive that other than, like, eat spicy things. Mm. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
So, like, I made, like, 400 pounds of spicy things. And then I tried to, like, walk, like, naked through the woods. But I didn't know how else you could do it.
So, yeah. I don't know. And then later you discovered...
Yeah,
a sweater.
Clothes.
Yeah, sweater. A nice warm jacket and
a nice
snow boots.
Warm jacket.
Well, that's cool. Well, good luck.
Check. Good luck is the right way to say that. And then, let's see. Yeah, the last one is just for Board Game Life. Wife and I are always searching for two-player games that are good. And we give a solid 4 thumbs up to Seven Wonders Duels, which It's like about less than 30-minute rounds. Like, you can play a game in 15 to 20 minutes, and every game's a little different, and the mechanics are solid. If you like Seven Wonders, it's like a perfectly distilled version of that for two people.
So is this like Seven Wonders Lite?
It has all of the mechanics that's in Seven Wonders. So you have like military, and then like the different things you can collect, like resources and science and all that. But it's just very fast. So like your time to each age is like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it just shoots past you really quick. So the first time you play it, you're like, oh, that seems really easy. Then you realize, no, it's actually a lot. It's pretty strategic because you need to make quick decisions, trying to like block your opponent so they can't get all the resources and like kind of bowl you over and that sort of thing. So it's interesting. Very interesting. Yeah.
Going to have to come by and check it out.
Ah, yes. Anytime.
All right.
I love being beaten by people at board games. That's my new hobby.
All right,
new hobby.
Come beat me at checkers. What do you got?
I set up the board. Let's do this.
That's right. All right.
It's like that something convince me meme, you know, where the guy's like in the quad, like he's just like, I can't win at board games. Convince me. Convince me I'm wrong. I can go. So played Apex. I like this game, and even went back to play Overwatch because some folks were playing it, and played that new Paris map, which is kind of super weird, but it's all right. But it's very crowded, which is, I guess, Paris. Mm-hmm. But like, you like walk 10 feet and it's like, there's the cap, and you're just like, what? Like, I just walked out of a spawn and the first point's right there. That's weird. And then like you walk another 10 feet and the next cap's right there too. And it was just kind of, I don't know. It was sort of like surprising, but man, just the action and everything is worrying to me. The new hero Baptiste is also worrying. I just don't have no idea how he's going to factor into the game. So I'm kind of, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. I'm going to let that new hero land, and Junkrat got a buff, so that's kind of cool. Sweet. Looking forward to that. Apparently, he's just OP, so that's great. He should be. He throws friggin' grenades. Like, he should be able to take out tanks. Anyway, that's... I'm just saying.
No bias or anything, though.
Well, but, like...
I'm being facetious, like, but...
I could be, like Junkrat, point blank, like, trying to destroy, like, I don't know, a Bastion, but Bastion with a pocket, like, Mercy. I can't even destroy it. It just doesn't make sense. Nope. So, the game don't make sense. So, and then I didn't really play any other games. I really wanted to pick up Ape Out, it's a Devolver game, came out for the Switch. It is basically like Saul Bass, Jazz meets Miami Hotline kind of. And I really want to get it and play it, but I don't know how to keep my 5-year-old from playing like an ultra gore game on my Switch. So just because, like, I mean, if he opens it and like he like clicks his face to go in the game, is going to be like, yeah, you can't do it. You're not of age. But then he'll just go back out and click my face, you know, like my avatar's game. I don't know. So I'm just like, the only thing that prevented me, because I was like, I don't know how I stop him from doing this, or like, because it's pretty gory, mm-hmm. pretty violent. There's guns. It's just not for a 5-year-old. So I don't know. Do I need my own Switch? And that's my new question. So hopefully there's a new Switch announced, yeah. and I'll just buy it. So, and then there's another game I'm excited about called Fimble. It's kind of like a, I don't know. I've been following it like on Screenshot Saturday and stuff like that for a really long time, but it's like a, almost like a Diablo game, like a slasher kind of thing, run and masher, but it's kind of Nordic themed. So you fight like big giant ogres and stuff like that. And I just kind of want that sensation, you know, like you're a tiny guy fighting a big monsters, big Jotunheim kind of characters. So anyway, another one I'm looking for. If you're listening to this podcast, I will hopefully be on vacation. So I'm wondering if I take a Switch on vacation, a romantic vacation with my wife. So I'm still debating, you know, it's like 2 days away here from when we're recording, but I'm still like, should I take a Nintendo with me on my romantic getaway where I want to relax, or should I not? And so I don't know. But I think the answer is I shouldn't. So we'll see how it goes, though. I don't know. But it's my time to relax, too. What do you do? Yeah. You know? So
go find a PC gaming house.
Yeah, that's what our friend Juan does. Yes. He goes to Mexico and
VPNs into his PC.
That's exactly what he does.
Text his brother, turn on my PC. VPNs in. I don't get it. Anyway, all right, that's all I got. Y'all got anything else you'd like to say? Yes, no? Okay.
Yeah, I think that's it.
All right, cool. Well, we'll sign off here. Thank you, dear listener, for downloading this. Be sure to Starheart favorite it up. That's how people find out about it. Follow us, aside_quest on Twitter. Tell us what games you're playing, because we'd like to know. And thank you very much for listening. Good luck. Have fun.